Well, thanks, Lily. And yeah, it's fun to be part of this field and get to be a great expert after just doing it for a few years, because it's such a small and growing field. I think every year that I've talked at APHA, I think this is the fourth, this room has gotten more full. There have been more people, and we're seeing new faces. So I think there are more and more experts on this field, and that's wonderful. Nothing to disclose. We started the Health Impact Project. Really, the intent is to promote and support the use of HIA as a decision-making tool at all levels of government, wherever we think decisions are being made that might affect health, and in other sectors that really often have no clue that they're making a decision that has any relevance to health whatsoever. One of the first questions that we asked is, I think everybody that I work with at Human Impact Partners and in California and around the country who have been involved in HIAs, they've been so busy doing a lot of the work to really build the field and get HIAs done that we haven't necessarily taken a step back and thought, what's coming out of this? What's the value of what we're doing? Is this effective? Is it achieving the goals we wanted to achieve at the beginning? Is it achieving other things we hadn't even anticipated? And so we set out to do a little bit of a very sort of a quick evaluation of what practitioners feel is happening as a result of doing HIAs. I want to start by just giving the context. I think most people in the room who are familiar understand that this is a field that's relatively newer in the U.S., but which has been practiced extensively around the world and continues to grow internationally. Its origins really come out of, I think, two different strains. One is actually as an outgrowth of environmental impact assessment, where people began to really try to include a more robust and broader health analysis in EIAs. And the second is around urban planning and the sort of increasing call for health in all policies internationally, which has really driven collaborations between health and urban planning and more broadly now in public policy, the realization that a lot of policies have an impact on health, and health in all policies is an increasing call, and health impact assessment has sort of arisen as a way to address that. There are a lot of nations that have a well-established practice, and others that are really developing a robust practice that's fairly new, and various levels of requirements or incentives or standards for HIA around the world. The other thing that's really driving HIA right now is actually internationally, it's becoming increasingly a part of international lending standards. So the International Finance Corporation and World Bank, and then most large lenders have signed on to a set of ethical lending principles called the Equator Principles. So most large lenders now actually talk about HIA. And this is new enough that we're not seeing this sort of become a sweeping requirement, but there is an awful lot of HIA beginning to be done. Multinational corporations like Shell and Chevron and other large mining companies are even beginning to do health impact assessment as part of their environmental and social impact assessment process. So what's happening in the U.S.? CDC has been trying to track HIAs that are in progress or have been completed for a long time. We've started to try to track this as well. And you know, this is all really people who've reported an HIA to us, so we're sure that there are other people who haven't let us know, and if that's the case, look at the website at the bottom of the page, because we would love to hear about any HIA work you're doing. We think right now there are about 80 completed HIAs, 40 or so in progress. I feel like every week I hear about a few more, so it's kind of taking off quite rapidly right now. In terms of the regulatory context, there's no mandate outside of environmental impact assessment. I'm not going to give you the talk, but a lot of the work that I've been involved in my history in this field has been arguing that there actually is a legal requirement to do this in environmental impact assessments at the federal level and in many states as well. And we're having success with that legal argument, but it's by no means a standard practice. These are completed HIAs in the U.S. As you can see, there's been a lot done in California and the West Coast, but it's really starting to kind of spread across the country. These are HIAs in progress, a very happy slide for me to see that much work going on. Lots of different sectors, but by far and away, you know, built environment and transportation have been the emphasis. And then we've seen a fair amount of work in natural resources and energy and housing, and then some policy work, or labor and employment policy, economic policies, some current work that we're funding in climate change, education, and agriculture and food policy, I think, is an area that a lot of people are interested in, starting to do work in, but is really pretty new. So what's happening? What's the value of all of this activity? And what are the outcomes? And so we did a survey in partnership with folks at CDC, with Johns Hopkins School of Public Health, and with San Francisco Department of Public Health. We basically made a semi-structured interview and called everybody that we could get to be on the phone with us to ask them a fairly simple set of questions about what did you do and what was the outcome to date. We managed to complete interviews on about 49. And this is what I'm going to show you on the next few slides is really very, very preliminary data analysis, nothing ready for publication. But I think the first thing that was really striking is how did people define success? And this is after the fact. This is maybe not what people would have told you was their objective going in, but these are things that people found coming out. So it brought health concerns into discussion. Decision makers now are routinely thinking about health in the area where this HIA was done. It addressed communities' concerns. The HIA recommendations were 100% adopted into a growth plan. It influenced the final design of a project. It educated decision makers about how a policy that really seemed to the decision maker to have nothing to do with health actually was linked to health. And also culture change. I think all of these allude to this, but it really indicates that agencies are beginning to work now together across institutional barriers that were typically had them operating in completely separate fields. And now there's really a lot of crosstalk happening, particularly between planning and health, but by no means only with urban planning. I think some more statements were increasing community awareness about HIA and how to use the results in advocacy for community issues. HIA is now a part of the EIS process. New partnerships between health and other agencies being even formalized in some cases. Building a strong coalition of stakeholders who are now much more active than they had been in the planning process. And a project lead being invited to be on a review committee for zoning code development. So again, just a number of outcomes, maybe not all of which were initial objectives. So this slide is more on specific recommendations. So each HIA comes up with often a long list of recommendations, and the question is, what's happening with those? One thing that we definitely discovered is, particularly with the planning decisions, so comprehensive plans, growth plans, zoning decisions, these get played out over years or decades. The planning for a new highway is a multi-year process. So part of it is, you may not be seeing new roads built yet with bike lanes as a result of NHIA, but you're beginning to see intermediate outcomes that indicate that health is going to be a bigger part of the subsequent steps in a planning process. But we also have seen some concrete, fairly tangible impacts, and these are just examples again. So there was a proposal to replace 300 low-income housing units with 1,200, I think it was 1,200, I pulled that off the top of my head, 1,200 market-rate units. And ultimately, the outcome of the HIA was that there was the no displacement alternative was adopted. And I believe what that meant is not only were permanent affordable housing units, 300 of them, included in this new development, but actually the building wasn't initially demolished so that people were able to stay in that community until they could move into new housing. So it didn't disrupt the social cohesion and social capital in that community. I think, that's a very tangible, the topic of this conference is social justice. I can't think of a stronger result in terms of social justice. A sub-area plan, so this is part of a city that's being, where the planning department is looking at a redevelopment initiative. We saw a major traffic calming plan go into place for dangerous intersections. A bike and pedestrian master plan was written, which hadn't been in existence before, and now the city agreed to promote affordable and safe housing in future development. A living wage ordinance in HIA contributed to passage and really kind of reframed the debate as being something that has a very tangible impact on people's health and well-being. For oil and gas leasing, we saw some new site-specific air and water quality mitigation measures, and it also contributed, I think the HIA really raised the dialogue of community health and well-being and contributed to a compromised leasing plan that communities were really much happier with. Senior housing near a highway. We saw a redesign in the entryway with a noise-buffered courtyard and central air filtration that wouldn't have been there. And then in the low-income housing energy assistance program in Massachusetts, we saw increased funding for energy assistance. Really a lot of pretty impressive results, I thought. There were challenges that people ran into, a lot of skepticism initially about how is this decision connected to health. Regulatory limits, sometimes agencies might want to do the right thing but really don't have the authority to implement a health-based recommendation. Timing, occasionally HIAs actually come in after the decision and obviously it's going to be harder to influence it then. Political resistance, people really are aware sometimes, I think, that this could change the power dynamic and there's resistance around that. Political controversy can sometimes just drown out the HIA. If this is a really high-stakes issue, it may be hard to get health sort of up into the discourse in the way that the economic or employment issues are. Sometimes we saw a case where a developer was unwilling to do anything until the city and planning commission really got behind the HIA recommendations and forced the issue a little bit. And then we've also heard people talk about a little bit, and I've experienced this, where recommendations are good ideas, but not really framed in a way that a regulator could actually implement them in statutory language. And meeting the regulatory agency halfway sometimes is a really good idea. Thinking about, all right, how do I take this from public health to what they actually need to put in their code? Not an easy thing to do. We also asked people to give a just self-reported rough estimate of how much it costs to do these. I think this is a really interesting result. People estimated costs both in terms of staff time and in terms of financial costs. We saw a range from 4 weeks of one person's time to 2 full-time equivalents for a year. And if there's an average, it looks like it's going to calculate out somewhere around one person's time for about half a year. And you know, we saw a duration in HIAs from 6 weeks to 2 years. So lots of different approaches to public participation and stakeholder engagement. We haven't finished analyzing the data here. What we found were that a large number, probably a substantial majority, reported some level of stakeholder engagement as part of their HIA, but not all of them. Some of them explicitly did not engage stakeholders. At least 18 of them, and we're kind of still counting, but reported responding to public comments on a draft HIA, which that I think is a bar we should be looking at, because that's what's required in EIA. You put out a draft environmental impact statement, you solicit public comments, and then you actually have to respond to all of them. very varied approaches. We had interviews with community leaders, we had community or stakeholder advisory councils, stakeholder surveys or structured community surveys, community coalitions representing different community interests. We've had tribal organizations actually writing an HIA and representing their community, key informant interviews, and then also just integrated into an EIS process. It's pretty good timing. So, you know, this is kind of my favorite way to talk about HIA. What I really think differentiates it, it's so easy, especially when you're learning the field, to get involved in what are the analytic methods, what is the HIA process, getting your report done. I think really what we're seeing, what all of the things we heard that make a difference in HIA don't have very much to do with the report. They have a lot to do with the fact that it's a structured, pragmatic way to interact with people who don't think they're making health decisions and kind of help them along and really kind of bring some new partnerships into creating healthy communities. Health Impact Project is funding a lot of HIA work, very diverse projects around the country. You know, we're hoping that this is going to lead to a lot of good examples of HIA and the value that it can add to a decision-making process. And that's it.